494, authorized network hut license agreement with Google Fiber Oregon LLC.
Ms. Henry, welcome.
Thank you. I'm Mary Beth Henry, Office for Community Technology. Mayor and commissioners, we're here today for the first reading of the Google Fiber hut license agreement. The hut license represents the final piece of the Google Fiber checklist response by the city. As you know, Google is considering deploying a gigabit symmetrical fiber to the home network here in Portland. We've already responded to everything on the checklist, including construction permits in the right-of-way, what the process looks like, detailed GIS mapping, and an assessment of city assets, such as conduit and real estate that might be leased for fiber network huts. Google's stated goal of the checklist was to make building a complex network efficient and less disruptive to the community. The council held a first reading on the proposed franchise with Google for the use of the streets to build and operate the fiber optic network system on May 7th. This is a companion piece to authorize the potential use of city property for precast concrete structures to house technical equipment and fiber connections for system operations. City staff, working with representatives from the five other metropolitan cities, developed this agreement. The agreement has two parts. The first consists of an overarching agreement with basic requirements addressing compensation, insurance, indemnification, and termination. The second consists of a site-specific agreement, which the city will approve for each of the specific proposed locations for fiber huts. No proposed locations have yet been identified by Google. Google anticipates needing one hut per 20,000 households. At anticipated completion of build-out, this means about 15 sites in roughly 130 square miles of Portland. The bureaus will evaluate any proposed sites and determine if there are site-specific appropriate conditions, including site security or environmental contamination concerns or other factors. As I said, at this time, no specific sites have been proposed for use by Google. Google plans to design the network over the next few months, and at that time, if they are interested in any city parcels, they will approach the city and the site-specific conditions will be negotiated. I am happy to answer any questions that you have.
So last time you were here, I asked you the question, will these same conditions be afforded to other providers of internet services, I guess Comcast, CenturyLink, will they be afforded the same access to city-owned property?
Yeah, similarly, yes, Commissioner, similarly situated providers would be offered the same opportunity.
Regardless of the speed of the service they're offering?
That is to be determined. One of the motivating factors for the city in this particular agreement is that it is gigabit symmetrical fiber to the home speeds that are far and away faster than any of the existing providers offer right now to homes in Portland. But it's certainly something that staff would consider.
So that decision resides with staff, not us?
We would have to come back to council with any specific license agreement for any other provider. This one is specifically with Google, and we would, if approached by other providers, come back to council for approval of that license.
So I presume, you know, I'm not sure what megabyte speeds are available right now, but I assume there's quite a leap. I mean, gigabytes really way up there, and that's great, but I'm sure there's still some headroom between what's offered now that would still be considered a considerable improvement in internet access speeds.
Certainly.
Is that right?
Okay. Yes. Yes, Commissioner.
So I just want to clarify, are you saying that you would not favorably recommend a request to use public property for a similar appurtenance to what Google's asking for if it's less than a gigabyte?
We would be open to any proposals, and we would be happy to discuss it with any providers that come forward.
So you're open to a proposal, meaning you would be open to a favorable recommendation for something less than a gigabyte of speed?
Certainly. 100 megabits is also good.
Thank you.
Other questions for Mary Beth? Great. Thank you. And I believe we have a panel of three, and we also have Darcy Nothnagel from Google Fiber here to answer questions if needed, but I don't think you were planning to testify, right? But we have Rob Wilcox, Don Westlight, and Sheldon Renan.
By the way, Mayor, is she here to answer questions or make an announcement?
Well, that would be always be allowed.
We do have some media here, so we could give you a
couple
platform.
Cameras, you know, go for it. Could the three of you come on up, please, and appreciate you being here and your patience in waiting for this. Good afternoon. Take it away, whoever wants to go first.
Okay, so I'm Don. Welcome. Thank you. Thanks for having us. So we're here to talk about neighborhood fiber distribution hut strategy. Most people wouldn't think of this as a very exciting topic, but maybe we can paint them and make them artistic and really cool. Today, you guys got to decide on what your strategy is going to be, or soon, I guess it's up in June. I'm not going to talk about OHSU's interest. I believe Dr. Ellenby came and has already done so. Broadband to the home is useful for healthcare serving the aging-in-place population, among other healthcare needs. Broadband is also useful for education, outreach, civic involvement, and indirectly the tax base. I'm here about infrastructure. I've delivered several successful broadband projects over the past 16 years. I was the lead engineer for Portland's Internet 2 bid in 98. In 2000, I co-founded the Regional Internet Exchange, which ties the various public and private networks together to improve internet quality in the region. In 2007, I wrote the technical plan for the Oregon Health Network, which was one of the most successful programs of its type in the country, deploying across multiple providers to over 300 underserved areas around the state. So I have an idea what is involved and at stake in the proposal. I'm sure there are aspects of this franchise agreement that some among us don't like. It was much the same in the 1800s when the country was building the great railroads. In simple terms, the towns did not get a railroad. The towns that did not get a railroad deal are either gone or quaint places to stop on the way to somewhere else. Those with railroads had the opportunity to develop into the 20th century, and many are still viable today, Portland among them. The Google deal is a good deal. Even though it won't initially serve everyone, and you wouldn't necessarily be looking at Google as a direct source of revenue. Truthfully, you're not going to get a better deal, nor does Portland have the resources to do this ourselves. Something about roads and the length of the school year. Anyway, Portland recently went through the exercise of developing a civic broadband plan. The very first stated goal in the plan, Portland attracts broadband-intensive businesses and institutions. This goal was placed first because it would enable all subsequent activity in the plan. Google can help you do that. All they need is a place for some junction boxes and permitting. Please make it happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate OHSU's engagement in this all along and yours as well. Thank you. Welcome.
I'm Rob Wilcox, policy and technical consultant in optical communications and utility infrastructure. There were no human-made structures in our area before about 30,000 years ago. But today we have streets, utility poles, fire hydrants, signposts in our right-of-way, all dedicated to the public good. And we have buildings in our parks and on city lands dedicated to the public good. I support this measure to add cabinets to the city right-of-way and equipment to buildings to city properties. To do so is the greatest benefit Portland can provide to every Portlander for public good. A fiber network to our homes with expanded bandwidth, with Google's laser focus on cost efficiency, speed, and quality makes possible well-paid jobs, including professionals seeking our quality of life who telecommute to companies out of town. Telecommuting, reducing our carbon footprint and wear on our roads. Better quality online education and job retraining. A greater fidelity for video exchanges between parents and children who are separated by time and space. A boost to our startup community, which can prototype new applications, creating new businesses, and a reliable path for cloud-managed medical, energy efficiency, security services, and more. Council and the bureaus mediate between residents who want no change and those who want rapid change. Its role is to listen to each and to chart a path that benefits the overwhelming middle looking forward to the future. Yes, these cabinets will be in front of about 250 Portlanders' homes. I have spoken to friends who would volunteer for curbside cabinets in front of their homes. We need to reach out to homeowners who may have cabinets in the city right away near their property and create a harmonious solution. The equipment should be a point of pride, a gateway to the internet, and something to be protected by the neighborhood and celebrated. We support the Bureau of Transportation program to develop a library of options to harmonize the cabinets with the neighborhood, including photographic landscape or art wraps, plantings, adjacent owner benefits, and more. We believe they will do so. I'm proud of Portland for its change from baseball speed to basketball speed in city approval processes to bring better internet connections to our neighborhood. Thank you for the opportunity to provide experience to council.
Thank you. Thanks for your help. Good afternoon.
Hi, I'm Sheldon Renan. I was born at Good Sam quite a while ago, and this city has changed quite a bit since then. And I came back to this city in 2008, but I'd been coming up to consult for Intel and other and various startups. And it's changing even more now. And the needs of the city and the needs of the people who work here are changing enormously, too. The basic issue is, I don't want to talk about numbers, because it seems to me that you guys have had to sit through the same presentations, the same figures, the same arguments, time after time for as long as I've been back and before that. And you've all done a lot of made attempts to get us where we need to go. But the fact is that the world has changed substantially, and you can't stay ahead of it with good enough speed and technology. What bandwidth broadband meant in 2008 is not what broadband needs today, and not what it needs to mean in the near future. The basic issue is simply something that I think you understand better than most of us who are sitting at this table, and that is complexity. As Portland grows and as it changes, the complexity grows and the demands. The only way an organism in a city as an organism can survive is with good signaling, communication between the various parts. So you have a situation like happened recently where we had a water problem. It took 4 hours or more to get that information out. If you had a proper infrastructure, that information should have been out immediately. Really, there's the basic issue is.
Can I just correct that? Because I appreciate the point you're making, but the information did get out immediately. There were five different redundancies used to get the information out. So I appreciate your point, but since we are talking about how we communicated a public health crisis. Live press conference, internet, notices to people in various different ways, social media. We would be happy if a typical customer got 3 or 4 different notices during that period of time.
And that's the way it should be.
That's the way it should be. Now, the one thing we would like to figure out is how to prevent our website from crashing. And apparently 200,000 people coming on the website at the same time put a strain on it. But we will fix that. And the second thing we want to try to figure out is how can we do essentially robocalls, 450,000 robocalls, more quickly with our providers than we currently are allowed to by contract? So I take your point very seriously, but we did use an array of methods to communicate with people, and we can always do better, but that was just one of a number of tools. To your point, the world's changed. Social media and other kinds of things are as important as phoning, or as useful as getting the word out.
Right. The basic thing is you've got to have an infrastructure in place that is substantial enough to handle a lot of different forms. Because what we're moving from are networks and systems to kind of fabrics and fields of communications, which is the way reality kind of works. In 2003 and 4, I was employed to do a new strategy for technology for the state of Florida. And one of the things that I discovered was, despite all the best wishes of all the people in government, there never is enough money to do the things that need to be done. But communities as a whole can often get those things done working together. Social capital, which depends on easy access, communications, and being able to move things back and forth and around, to fork things, as Amber Case likes to say, is the key to making progress in almost every area where the city wants to make progress: health, education, and economic development. Basically, we have to lower the cost of access to communications and resources and working together as much as possible. The problem with going with the people who've been in this business, telecommunications business, in the past, is they work on a system of scarcity. They constrict the supply of what you need, and they charge you for every increase. And they do that whether you're paying for a movie or health services or internet. And if the same people who control the other services control the internet, things can get very bumpy if they're not responsible, as we know. The most important thing is to recognize that connectivity is not just a utility. It's a kind of a natural resource, and it's the most important strategy we have, more important even than Moore's Law, for getting things done nowadays. And the plans of the current incumbents, unless they're forced to up the speed, do not make room for all of the bandwidth which you're going to need as you move things to the digital world. And the new world that Portland is facing is a world that is as much digital as it is atoms. And people like to talk about augmented technology, augmented reality. There is no augmented reality. It's the new normal. But the only way we can get there is by leading the duck, by overbuilding, by putting in the capacity so that we can provide as much bandwidth as possible and make it available to everybody, so that people can work from homes, so that people can work together from anywhere, and so that people don't have to move around all the time to have meetings or move things around. That's it.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Thank you all very much. Appreciate you being here. Thanks. Are there folks signed up to testify?
We had two people, Crystal Alinsky and Charles Johnson.
Charles is here. Come on up, Charles. Okay. And then we'll call Mary Beth back up for questions. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, Commissioners. What a day you have. I want to thank Mr. Saltzman for implying the possibility that CenturyLink and Comcast could step up with better speeds and that this could foster broad improvement. But I think we do need to take a moment to look at part of the reality of this situation. Unfortunately, I don't have a mirror to hold up, but we have four financially secure white men. I'm not sure how many law degrees. Three out of, you don't have a law degree, Charlie. You do not belong up there. So we have four financially secure white men talking about a program to make mostly other white men rich. I mean, we do have Mary Beth here, works for the city, and we do have the lady from Google. But we haven't had enough conversation about the digital divide and how this service is going to reach Jefferson High School and further north in Portland. And since you mentioned having staff here for Portland, I'm sure Mary Beth has some good things, if you direct that question, to talk about how much of this plan, how much of the franchise fee. I know we're mostly looking at the huts. Hopefully we'll have a lot of huts in NOPO and strategies to help this critical service, as the one man mentioned, artificial scarcity, to end some of that scarcity for some of the most challenged citizens of our city. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Mary Beth?
I have a question for Mary Beth. Mary Beth, we had some testimony earlier about these so-called huts potentially being placed in front of homes.
Not the huts, the cabinets. Right?
Cabinets.
Yeah.
May I clarify? I think I know where you're going with your question.
The agreement today is the overarching license. I'm reading your mind. Overarching license.
Address yourself, please, just this issue.
Agreement for the fiber huts, which they'll need approximately 15. Separate and apart, but related, under the leadership of Commissioner Novick, the Portland Bureau of Transportation is looking at a policy whereby they may allow what are called telecom cabinets. And telecom cabinets are actually being requested by multiple parties. It's not really being driven by Google, but many others as well. Those are small 2x2x4 telecom cabinets that may be placed in the right-of-way once PBOT develops a process with appropriate public involvement and outreach. So there were two different things that were talked about
this morning. So that's
helpful
because I'm looking at the Google Huts photographs and imagining that next to someone's, the fiber huts images and one imagining that in front of someone's home. So if we're now talking about the cabinets, are there any noise issues or public health issues that will have to be examined as part of next steps?
Well, when I spoke to the city manager in Kansas City, he indicated that the fiber huts do have air conditioning units that go on when needed, depending on the weather, but they have located them. They're not very loud, according to him. He's visited all of them. And they are also located in areas of the city not close to residential areas.
And what about the cabinets?
The cabinets do not have noise emitting from them.
And do they emit any radiation or anything else that we might...
No RF emissions that I'm aware of.
Thank you.
Great. Other questions for Mary Beth? Well, this is going to pass to second reading. We're not acting on it today. But appreciate the panel here. I'm intrigued by the suggestion about citizens volunteering for a cabinet in front of their house, which may be a factor. Of course, it's a system design issue, so they have to put the huts and the cabinet in the right place for the network. But I'm going to shamelessly up the ante on Google, who still has to formally select Portland and volunteer. Since I have a utility pole in my front yard, which otherwise this will slightly block my view of a nice city park, but in order to get this done, I'll volunteer for a cabinet in front of my house. Thank you, and we'll set this over for second reading next week.
Mr. Mayor, I should note that we're thinking of it if we haven't already contacted RAC to talk about how they can make the cabinets artsy.
There we go. That's a good idea. Great. Thank you,
Mayor
Beth.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, and we'll vote on that next week, and let's move on. By the way, Council, I'm intending if we are still at it at 1:30 to take a half-hour lunch break, if that's amenable to everybody. Let's move on to the regular agenda, item 510.
Revised residential solid waste and recycling collection rates and charges effective July 1, 2014.
Second reading, roll call.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Done. 511, please.
Authorized application to the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance for a grant in the amount of $418,619 for the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant Program, fiscal year 2014, local solicitation to prevent or reduce crime and violence.
And there are a series of these. Should we call them all? And I know we've got a couple of folks from the Police Bureau, Captain Wagonek, Captain Rodriguez here. But
Captain Rodriguez and Wagnett are here. Yes,
yeah,
we can
okay.
do. I was actually going to speak to 511, 512, and 513.
Okay, let's take those three together because they're all Byrne grant. So could you read the other two, please?
Certainly. 512, authorize an intergovernmental agreement with the City of Gresham for the use of U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance, FY 2014, Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grants Program funds, and 513, authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County for the use of U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance, FY 2014, Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistant Grant Program funds.
Great. Thank you. Aye.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Catherine Ryland. I'm the Fiscal Manager of the Police Bureau, but I'm here in the capacity of the 2014 JAG Grant Project Manager, and wanted to tell you about that application. On or before June 10th, 2014, the City of Portland will submit an application to the U.S. Department of Justice, DOJ, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance for the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Grant, also known as JAG, for fiscal year 2014 local solicitation. The 2014 JAG funds will be made under disparate certification to the City of Portland, Multnomah County, and the City of Gresham. The JAG solicitation requires the City to submit a joint application for the aggregate eligible allocation to all disparate municipalities and to also act as fiscal agent for the grant. Intergovernmental agreements must be executed with Multnomah County and the City of Gresham in order to obligate agencies' roles and responsibilities, which are addressed in items 512 and 513 on this agenda. DOJ has notified the City that it will award a grant in the amount of $483,619 with no match requirement. The award is allocated as follows. The City of Portland will receive $235,548. Multnomah County will receive $185,076, and the City of Gresham will receive $62,995. The Police Bureau will use $235,548 in JAG funding for the following two items. Number one, to retain a 1.0 FTE senior management analyst for 14 months at a total cost of $125,548. The senior management analyst is responsible for recommending, developing, and implementing Police Bureau policies and procedures to include facilitating the development of directives, applicable manuals and associated handbooks, and other written communications related to policies and procedures, conducting research and analysis of best practices, and recommending action and assisting in formulating policy, procedure, and legislative positions related to those best practices. And two, to contract with LifeWorks Northwest to coordinate treatment, temporary housing, counseling, and training opportunities for individuals involved in prostitution-related offenses at a cost of $110,000. Multnomah County will use $185,076 in JAG funding for the following three items. Number one, to retain a 0.45 FTE North Neighborhood Deputy District Attorney for 12 months at a cost of $61,692. Number two, to retain a 0.5 FTE Parole and Probation Officer for 12 months at a total cost of $61,692. And three, to hire a 1.0 FTE River Patrol Unit Enforcement Deputy for 6 months at a total cost of $61,692. The City of Gresham will use $62,995 in JAG funding to amend their contract with Portland Opportunities Industrialization Center to provide a 1.0 FTE employee to provide outreach services to high-risk gang-involved and gang-associated youth. As part of the required solicitation review process, the Police Bureau posted the grant solicitation and Bureau contact information on the City's Police Bureau webpage on April 25, 2014. Visitors to the site were able to view a description of the grant program, the solicitation, and my contact information as the grant project manager. The solicitation was removed and the completed application was posted on May 14, 2014. Again, my contact information was listed. Visitors to the site were encouraged to contact me if they had any questions or concerns about the application or the application process. This public governing body review of the grant application document and the related intergovernmental agreements provides an opportunity for public comment and involvement, which satisfies a requirement of the grant. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, questions for Catherine? All right, appreciate that. And we have folks here from the Bureau if there are further questions for them. Is there anyone signed up to testify on any of these three items?
And we had Charles Johnson and Crystal Alinsky.
Okay, come on up, Charles.
Good afternoon again, Commissioners. I think we don't want to overlook one of the most important things about this grant. Eddie Byrne is a young man who lived in New York City and volunteered to serve his community as a police officer. A lot of citizens in Portland have a variety of opinions about some of the quality of some of our police officers, but we do know that tragically some of them die in the line of duty, and that's why there is a Eddie Byrne Memorial Grant. It's because after only 2 years of service as a police officer, he died. And I think that should have been mentioned by the police department. But the other thing, earlier today in the budget discussions, we had some talk about the police department and administrative structure. And I want to encourage you, Mayor, as police commissioner, to think back to your time at HDR in the private sector and look at the management and staffing levels there and see how they compare to what some people feel is a bloated, overmanaged, over-captained police department. I know that doesn't apply specifically to this grant. Obviously, anytime we can get money to help the police hopefully do good things, we want to take advantage of that money. But I think that there's a sentiment in the community that as police commissioner, along with this grant, you want to address the idea of if, even if we have a lot of good, well-paid captains, if the people of Portland would be better served with more ordinary line officers. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Anyone else? Okay, then these three ordinances all passed a second reading. And let's take up 514.
514, authorize a five-year grant agreement with Volunteers of America for the purpose of assisting victims and survivors of domestic violence.
Great. Captain Rodriguez, welcome.
Good afternoon. I am Captain Rodriguez with the Portland Police Bureau's Family Services Division, and we're here to seek your approval for a continuation of our five-year grant for two victims advocates for a domestic violence unit. And here is Chris Gilhard with Volunteers of America. I'll give you a little brief.
Welcome.
Sure. Hello. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Bilhart with Home Free, which is a program of Volunteers of America, Oregon, and we've had a 15-year relationship with the Portland Police Bureau in providing advocates to the DV unit to work as a team to provide the range of services that survivors need. We are happy to redo our commitment for another 5 years, and we've found it to be a really effective partnership in terms of police response as well as the ability of community-based domestic violence services providers to work well with the police and assist victims in a number of different ways. A number of victims that we contact through this partnership are not receiving services through the domestic violence community-based services, and it's a great way to have them have access to those services and get connected in. So we look very much forward to another 5 years.
Great. Thank you. Questions?
Just want to comment that I had the honor of serving on the board of Volunteers of America, Oregon, which is a misnomer because, of course, they're not a volunteer organization. They're the largest social service organization in the state of Oregon. And this particular program gets national recognition for their work. And, Chris, thanks for your great work.
Thank you. Thank you both. Anyone signed up on this item?
No, I did not have a sign-up sheet out.
Okay, anyone want to testify? All right, thank you, votes. We appreciate the partnership. It rolls to second reading next week, 515.
515, extend an intergovernmental agreement with Oregon City and TriMet for transit police services for 1 year.
Okay, Catherine, come on back.
Catherine Ryland from the Police Bureau again. This is an ordinance that just basically syncs the Oregon City Transit agreement with the Prime agreement and all the other municipal agreements associated with transit. This one, for some reason, ended in 2014. We wanted to extend them all to 2015.
Okay. Easy enough. Anyone want to testify on this item? And it passes to second reading as well. And then let's take up the two Multnomah County items, 516, 517.
516, amend an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County District Attorney to reimburse the Police Bureau for overtime costs of officers assigned to the District Attorney's Office as investigators. And number 517, amend an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County District Attorney Office for child abuse investigations to increase funding by $60,000 and extend the term.
Any discussion? So roll call on 516, please.
Ish.
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And on 517.
Fish?
Aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And 518, you can read. That's also a second reading.
Authorize a five-year grant agreement with Catholic Charities El Programa Hispano for the purpose of assisting victims and survivors of domestic violence.
Mayor, before we do a roll call on this, I've had a chance to brief your office and each of my colleagues with some concerns about this contract, and because of the demands of the election last week and some other things, I was not able to get the answers that I sought, so I asked that this be sent over for 1 week.
Okay. Hearing no objection, we'll set this over for a week and move on to 519.
Authorize a price agreement for uniformed security officer services for a not-to-exceed yearly value of $1,380,713 and a five-year contractual total not to exceed $6,903,569.
Mr. Kita, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm expecting Christine to be here also to discuss the procurement side of this. But I want to bring forward this contract. We did a lot of work with the SEIU local who represents the employees of the contractor related to the performance standards that are now included in this test. Yes, sir.
If Christine's, we're going to have questions of this, mm-hmm. Mayor. Should we put this off?
Sure. A couple? If you have questions and she's not here yet, why don't we, Bob? Why don't we just hold it for a little while and come back to it?
Okay.
So stand by and let's move on to item 520 for now.
520. Pay claims of Kyla and Jakyla Wilson in the sum of $816,263 involving the Portland Police Bureau.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon,
Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, my name is Kate Wood. I'm the risk manager. The ordinance before you today resolves the city's obligation under our insuring agreement with our excess insurance carrier. It follows a settlement negotiated by the insurance carrier with the plaintiffs in this case. The amount requested is in this ordinance is for the balance of the city's self-insured retention. The city's excess liability insurance carrier took over defense of the case with the intention to settle about a month before the scheduled trial. The suit was brought against the city and Portland Police Bureau for failing to arrest an individual who later caused a car crash, resulting in severe permanent injury to the claimants. At the time of the contact with this individual who later caused the crash, our police officer determined that he was not an immediate danger to himself or others. He was not driving a vehicle, nor was he in a vehicle. She checked wants and warrants. There were none posted. She allowed him to go on, having no way of knowing what would happen later in the day. The insurer and the city agree that the officer involved did not have legal cause to arrest the individual at the time of her contact. However, given the devastating impact on the innocent Wilson family, the insurer made a business decision to settle this lawsuit rather than risk a jury verdict in this very tragic case. We ask that you approve this ordinance for the sum of $816,263 to be paid to the estate of the family.
Anything to add?
Nothing. I was the attorney, really, that worked on this, and this is a tragic situation for this family. But, of course, we're contractually obligated to let the insurance company do what they wanted to do. They were seeking $32 million, and the insurance company, coupled with the insurance company for Clackamas County, decided to settle the case right after the case had been argued to the jury. Essentially, it was out of our hands.
Okay. Understood. Questions for either the city attorney's office or our risk manager? Appreciate you both. Thank you. And we'll see if there's anyone signed up to testify on this.
No one signed up.
Okay. Then we'll take a roll call on the emergency ordinance.
Fish.
Obviously, our hearts go out to the Wilson family. Aye.
Sussman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
It was a tragic situation, and this is the right thing. Aye. Appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, 521. Unless Christine is here. Oh, yes, she is. I'm sorry. Let's go ahead and take 521, and then we'll move back to the previous item. So,
521, amend right-of-way use agreement granted to New Singular Wireless PCS LLC for mobile telecommunication services.
Hi, good afternoon. Jennifer Lee with the Office for Community Technology. The ordinance you have before you today is substantially similar to the ordinance on which you heard presentations last week. While last week's ordinance proposed to amend Verizon Wireless's agreement to create a small cell pilot program, today's ordinance would grant a similar agreement to New Singular Wireless, also known as AT&T Mobility, to their right-of-way use agreement to allow for a small cell pilot. I won't repeat last week's remarks or presentations, but I'm happy to answer questions you might have. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Questions? All right, and there's no one signed up to testify on this, I don't believe?
No.
Okay, then that rolls to second reading, and let's go back to item 519, please. So Bob and Christine, come on up, please. Okay, so you had some questions about this, Commissioner?
No, Fish? I just thought, since he was making a presentation and alluded to
But he wanted reinforcements, sure. And now she's here, so.
So we'll have the presentation.
Mayor and Commissioners, apologize for being late.
Okay. Well, I think we're late. You're not.
Christine Moody, Procurement Services. In February 2014, a request for proposals was issued to provide routine special event security for the Portland Building, City Hall, 1900 Building, Kirby Building, Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant, Emergency Communication Center, and Union Station. In March, 7 responses were received. The proposal responses were reviewed, evaluated, and scored by a selection committee made up of city staff and a minority evaluator. The proposal from G4S was determined responsive to the requirements of the solicitation and received the highest evaluation score. The city issued a notice of intent to award on April 10, 2014, and no protests were received. You have before you a procurement report recommending an award of a contract to G4S Secure Solutions, USA, for uniform security officer services in amount not to exceed of $1,380,713.72. And I'll turn this over to Bob Keita to answer any questions you might have.
Questions? Any? Okay. Thank you both. Anyone signed up to testify on this item?
I did. No. Okay. Actually.
So then that rolls to the second reading. No, I'm sorry. It's adoption of a report. So a motion to adopt the report,
so moved.
Please.
Second.
Further discussion? Roll call.
Fish.
Aye.
Sussman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Thank you. Okay. 522.
Amend and extend term of limited right-of-way use agreement granted to Verizon Wireless, VAW LLC, DBA Verizon Wireless, for mobile telecommunication services.
Second reading and roll call.
Fish.
Aye.
Sussman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. 524.
523.
Oh, sorry. I skipped 523. Don't want to do that.
Revised sewer and stormwater rates, charges, and fees in accordance with the fiscal year 2014-15 sewer user rate study.
Any comments before we vote? Second reading? Roll call, please.
Fish?
I want to thank my hardworking team for all the good work they put into this. A number of them are here today, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Salzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. This is well done. Aye. 524.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement in the amount of $45,000 with Portland Public Schools to reduce district water usage and save money for schools.
Mr. Fish.
Director Schaff.
Good morning. I'm David. Or good afternoon. I'm David Schaff. I'm the director of the Water Bureau. We were going to have Jeff Hammond from Portland Public Schools, the Building Operations and Energy Program Manager here, but he had to leave a little while ago. I will try and go through it fairly quickly. As I think you know, the Water Bureau, through its Water Efficiency Program, provides conservation information and technical resources to customers to help use their water efficiently and cost effectively. We coordinate with several different partnerships and programs, including education and outreach, water efficient device distribution, technical assistance, and incentive programs. And one of our partners over the years has been Portland Public Schools. We help them reduce their water use and become more efficient so that additional funds are available to support education. So we've worked with Portland Public Schools on projects last year that eliminated single pass cooling in kitchen areas. And a single pass cooling system removes heat from walk-in coolers and they transfer it to a supply of clean water, which then goes directly into the sewer. That's why it's called a single pass. It's very efficient, but it uses a lot of water. And in fact, these units can waste hundreds of thousands of gallons of water every day, depending on demand, condition, and size of the units. So in an IGA that we worked in 2012-13 with Hosford Middle School and Arleta Elementary School, we worked with PPS on replacing their single-pass water-cooled systems with air-cooled systems with assistance from the Water Bureau. And in the first year since the units were installed, Arleta saved about 633,000 gallons and Hosford 586,000 gallons, almost $20,000 in today's rates. So replacing those old water-cooled equipment with air-cooled equipment dramatically reduces water use and saved money on operations for PPS. This agreement seeks approval to enter into a new intergovernmental agreement with PPS to continue to eliminate single-pass cooling equipment and replacing high-use water fixtures with more efficient ones over the next 3 years to help them reduce their overall water use. And Jeff was going to talk about specific projects that they had in mind that they were going to be working with us on.
Do we have similar arrangements with other school districts in Portland?
I don't believe with other school districts.
Judy?
No. With other partners, but not with other school districts that I'm...
Did we approach Portland Public Schools, or did they approach us?
Why don't I ask Judy Ranton, the manager, to come up, and she will be able to answer that question rather than me shouting back.
Well, I guess the point is we should make this great program available to the other school districts within the city of Portland, regardless of whether they ask.
That's in our work plan.
That's in your work plan?
Mm-hmm. We have worked with...
First, identify yourself.
Oh, my name is Judy Ranton. I manage the Water Efficiency Program for the Portland Water Bureau. We have worked with a variety of Portland Public Schools, private schools. We have worked with David Douglas in years past, and we will renew efforts again. I believe those are the two major
Park Rose.
And Park Rose. Yeah.
Okay. So we will report back to Commissioner Salzman and the council on our efforts in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
We'll notify the other districts of the program. And I guess it leads to another question, though, I have for you, David, which is, why don't you explain why we believe this is an appropriate use of ratepayer dollars to invest in?
Well, the water efficiency program is actually fairly significant. This is a small piece of it, and the reason why we're coming here to you is because we have to have your agreement on the IGA between us and another governmental entity. But the goal is to help our customers, whether they're large or small, reduce and conserve and be more efficient in their water usage. So, for instance, we've worked with the Widmer brothers. We've worked with Siltronics on helping them do technical analysis. We do grants with low-income housing programs to reduce the plumbing fixtures. The idea being that the more we are able to conserve and save and use water efficiently, the better are we able to stretch the supply that is ultimately finite.
Great. Thank you both. Appreciate that. Any further discussion, or is there any public testimony on this item? If not, then where did it go? This passes the second reading, and let's take 525.
525, authorize the Water Bureau Administrator to execute intergovernmental agreements and grant agreements in support of the Lead Hazard Reduction Program in the amount of $375,000 per year over a five-year period.
Director Schaff.
Again, with me today is Perry Cabot. He is with the Multnomah County Health Department and Environmental Health. He will talk a little bit about what the county is doing with these grants, but I want to just talk a little bit about the Lead Hazard Reduction Program. So I suspect you know that in 1991, the EPA published the Lead and Copper Rule to control lead and copper in drinking water. While lead and copper enter the drinking water primarily through plumbing materials, there's no known lead in the Portland system. In our area, lead in drinking water is primarily the result of household plumbing materials, especially in homes built or plumbed between 1970 and 1985. But lead in the water is not the most common source of lead exposure in the Portland area. It's actually lead paint dust from pre-1978 homes. So since 1997, the city has complied with the EPA's rule through its Lead Hazard Reduction Program, developed in coordination with state and local public health agencies. And as an aside, we've gotten several awards, both statewide and national, on our Lead Hazard Reduction Program. It has four components: treatment and monitoring. I think you know we adjust our pH in our water to reduce its corrosiveness, which leads to lead and copper leaching from plumbing. We've been very successful with that. We've reduced our lead at the tap by over 50% over those years. Our home lead hazard reduction program is in partnership with the Portland Housing Bureau, and we provide local matching funds for HUD grants. Lead and education, water education and testing, we provide free lead and water testing to all homes in the Bull Run service area. Outreach for this is targeted to homes built between 1970 and 1985 with children six and under or pregnant women living in the home. And then finally, public education and outreach. This ordinance authorizes the Water Bureau to execute the community partner agreements that fulfill this fourth component, public education and outreach. That includes the following things: free blood testing, workshops and hotlines for homeowners, tenants, and landlords, soil testing for gardens and yards. All of the partners we work with are selected annually through a request for proposal process. And our selection committee includes representatives from Oregon Health Authority, Lead Poisoning Prevention Program, the Portland Housing Bureau, and the Water Bureau. And three of our partners are the Multnomah County Health Department, the Community Energy Project, and Portland Public Schools. And at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Perry to talk a little bit about the Multnomah County Health Program.
Great. Welcome. Thanks for your patience.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. I'd like to thank the Council and Director Schaff for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Perry Cabot, and I am a program specialist with the Multnomah County Environmental Health Program. My position coordinates the County Lead Line Program, largely through a grant from the Portland Water Bureau through the Lead Hazard Reduction Partnership. For many years, the Multnomah County Health Department Lead Line Program has worked in close partnership with the Portland Water Bureau through the Lead Hazard Reduction Partnership to provide frontline response to the issue of lead poisoning in our community. The Lead Line provides several important services to the residents of the city of Portland and surrounding areas. First, the Lead Line is the central triage point for community concerns and questions around lead poisoning and lead poisoning prevention. We address these concerns and questions directly, or we connect these community members with the appropriate partner resource through the Lead Hazard Reduction Partnership. Second, all Portland Water Bureau customers, including customers in surrounding water districts who purchase water through the Portland Water Bureau, have the option of receiving a free kit to test their home tap water for lead. All of these requests and the accompanying questions and education of these customers is the responsibility of the Multnomah County Lead Line.
In recent months, we have handled thousands of calls and emails from customers seeking testing kits and information about lead in water, which was the last water issue before the recent one. The Lead Line also provides free blood lead screening for over 1,000 young children and pregnant women each year in an effort to identify and respond to lead exposures in our community before they become chronic or higher levels with the real risk of permanent injury to a child's developing nervous system. Finally, the Lead Line provides free home environmental investigations for any and all children who are identified through our screening clinics or through a blood test at their own doctor as having an elevated level of lead in their blood. We seek to identify the source of lead exposure in the home and then connect these families with the information and resources necessary to take control of their own fears and move forward to the health, wellness, and safety of their families. The old scourge of lead poisoning still haunts our communities. While the vast majority of cases are connected to lead paint and dust in our older homes, the support of the city's lead hazard reduction grant places Portland in the forefront of cities across the country in terms of progressive and proactive community resources around all aspects of lead poisoning prevention. On behalf of the many diverse families that I serve through this program, I thank you all for your time and your support and look forward to our continued partnership.
Thank you very much. Questions? Comments? Thank you both.
Thank you.
Anyone signed up?
I did not have a sign-up sheet out.
Okay. Anyone want to speak on this item? Then it rolls to second reading. And now we have a series of second reading items to close out what was the morning session. So let's start with 526.
526. Amend a contract with Baseline Industrial Construction, Inc. for additional rock excavation to complete the Alder Creek Fish Passage project for an amount not to exceed $137,898.
Roll call.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
There was a former commissioner in charge of the Water Bureau who was notorious for fishing at the Bull Run. We do not expect to see any pictures of you out there with a net, Commissioner Fish. Aye.
527. Authorize a contract and provide for payment for the construction components of the Road 10 MP 0.6-1.8 project, as defined in the Bull Run Roads Asset Management Plan, at an estimated cost of $685,000.
Second reading, roll call.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. 528.
Authorize the rates and charges for water and water-related services during the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2014, to June 30, 2015, and fix an effective date.
Roll call, please.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. 529.
Amend fee schedule associated with fire regulations.
Roll call.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. 530.
Revised transportation fees, rates, and charges for fiscal year 2014 to 15, and fix an effective date.
Roll call, please.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. And 531.
Amend fee schedules for building, neighborhood inspections, and sign permits.
Roll call.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
That wraps up all of our ordinances for implementing the various budget decisions. So happy to vote aye, and happy to declare that the council is recessed for 35 minutes.
Amen.
Time off for good behavior.
Nice job today. Steve, well done this morning.
Thank you.
Yeah.